right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the producers and or the persons appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of CIUT FM.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor. First of all, I have to say how grateful I am for all the support that shown by our listeners for the station, CIUT. What's our slogan? Love your radio. Apparently people do. And we've had a wonderful response. I'm not in charge of the totals, but I know the station did very, very well. And the contributions in the name of the Taylor Report have been substantial, and I'm very, very grateful. Which, as you know, will only incite me to do further, so I'm going to continue to do that. I've got to be sure and say something that's always important every year or every time we do fundraising is that we remember the name Karen Snooks, who is a postal worker, trade union activist, socialist fighter, and a really fine artist. Comes from a great family, and we always hear from Ron Meswak, her husband, and remembering in the name of Karen Snooks to support the station. Karen was a regular listener and helped guide us, gave us a lot of great advice, and it was just good for our spirit to know that she was there for us. And so we're very grateful to Ron and his family. And of course there's a lot of other names. And I better not start on them because I will become choked up. There's a lot of great people to talk about, and we will in future programs be talking about some of the people who contribute and also who join us sometimes in the program. And I'll say again, even though it's my name on it, but it's a collective effort. There's a lot of people who want to get the word out on issues and turn to the Taylor Report, and we're really glad they do. Today, I think it's very important to underline some matters. I think we have to talk a little bit more on the Taylor Report about Russia, because in recent months, the headlines have all been sort of dominated by the new question of, you know, the American decision taken years and years ago to pivot towards China, to begin to develop an antagonistic, adversarial approach to China. There's a well-established one towards Russia. But in recent years, and we've been talking more and more about the China matter. We talked about it through the World Health Organization, which the United States now, because it has been such a disgraceful excuse for a country in terms of its response, the protecting of its own citizens. We've passed 120,000 deaths in the United States. And we have the President of the United States holding meetings, which it reminds me of Jonestown. It's kind of like the followers have to show their faith in the leader by exposing themselves to COVID-19 in a building. And not only are they supposed to do that, expected to do it, but they're supposed to sign a waiver saying that if they get sick, they can't blame him. We're talking about a country that advertises itself as a leader of, quote, the free world, and as an exemplar, and so wealthy and so marvelous, etc. So this country, the United States, has been directing a lot of attention, negative attention, to China. I think pretty everybody understands the scapegoat. It's their own failure. But we've been over that ground, and we might come back to it in the program. But I think that there's a new matter that's come to the fore related to this a policy of the United States to call out other countries as adversaries. That's a unilateral decision. They've decided the Democrats are very hostile to Russia, and they're not shy about the way they talk about it. And it's so incongruous. We've talked about it on this show, and we're going to move to the issue of why Russia should be in the forefront part of our program today. But the key aspect of it, of approaching this issue, and the reason we do, of course, is because we care about international peace and respectful, productive relations among states, is the U.S. Gives itself the power to decide that somebody is an adversary unilaterally. And this is not reciprocal. It isn't on the part of the leaders of Russia. They didn't agree that the U.S. is their adversary. They never say so. And as a matter of fact, they talk about why is it they're being called out? What is going on here that they have to come in for this special attention directed from Washington? I realize they're what they used to call running dogs. There are people like Germany, countries like Germany, France to a lesser extent, Britain always there, loyal and barking, and of course Canada and others. Not a great group. It's actually a West European group. They usually sort of stand behind Washington and say, yeah, we're not happy either. But it's really Washington that plays this game of treating other states as adversaries when the other state has not agreed to be an adversary. When we speak of China, they do not agree with the terminology. When the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, others write editorials, they say, well, China now is feeling its oats. It's beginning to act like a, you know, thinks it's a big power, and it's starting to throw its weight around. Well, that's actually just a bunch of blarney. There's no content. That's just something the editorial writer decided to say. And on the Taylor Report, we've tried to point out what they actually do say. And on this matter, and I'm going to touch further on China, and we'll go back to Russia shortly. China says we don't regard ourselves as number one, though implied and understood. United States calls itself number one. And they say we do not regard ourselves as either number one or desiring to be number one. When they identify themselves in the world, the Chinese speak of themselves as a developing country that had been occupied by Western imperialist powers. Let's call them out. Yeah. France, United States, at one time Germany, Japan, who, by the way, Japan's always named as a sort of a Western power, an honorary Western power. Anyway, China says it was under the hegemony and under the boot of those powers, and it was driven into poverty and civil war and all kinds of ugly ramifications that come from being under the boot of foreign powers. So they say, and they're trying to regain their footing and to become a all-round developed country. But they actually define themselves as developing, and they say, if you want to know who we are together with the former colonial world, that would be the world under the boot of France and the United States and England, those countries in Asia, Africa, South America, who've experienced colonialism and had their economies destroyed by colonialism, certainly distorted and wrecked. And they say, we are all brothers, actually. We are in development. And we are not in antagonistic or adversarial position towards the former colonial powers. They say they believe in a philosophy of mutual respect and of what they have a term, win-win, where you enter into relations and trade to see if you can maximize the benefit of your two countries. On the Taylor Report, I know I say this, and I hope it, for those who sort of heard this kind of approach, that you say, okay, I recognize it. I hope you do. I hope people begin to understand the language necessary for countries to achieve peaceful relations and to eliminate the old concept of imperial power, of hegemony. And the state that believes in hegemony, states plural, but number one is the country that calls itself number one, and is U.S. And this is actually a problem, and it's one we all have to work on solving, because it doesn't have to be that way. I'm pointing out the Russians do not accept the idea that there's any basis for this adversarial relationship and trade wars and sanctions designed to prevent another country from doing its from developing. And so I want to bring in the matter of the day, in my opinion, and that is there's been a speech given by President Putin of Russia. Actually, a speech. He's published a document. You can find it at nationalinterest.org. I urge everybody who wants to understand the world and wants to the best for all of us and would like to see nuclear armament reduced, like to see the sizes of armies reduced, treaties established that are beneficial and can bring us into a better, safer world, particularly in light of the threat of from a virus such as COVID-19, which tells us that we could all be harmed together just because we're humans, not because we belong to the party of number one or those from the developing. We're all menaced by common problems, and if we could define the world in such a way that we work on those problems together, that would be the way we should all go. But that isn't the way, of course, it's been going. So June 18, 2020, nationalinterest.org, there is the full text of an article by the leader of one of the most powerful countries on earth. I tell you that were we to be blessed by a long, thoughtful article under the hand of the President of the United States, Donald Trump, I would be telling you, let's read this long, detailed, thoughtful article. Let's be candid, no such thing's going to happen because he's tweeting and his opponent is apparently asleep or not interested. Certainly other people will write papers, but Vladimir Putin, he comes from, you know, a thousand years of Russian history. They've been around for a while, and they've produced always a formidable intelligentsia capable of thoughtful articles and the kind that they would share with others. So Putin's motivation was that he wants us to think about the lessons of the 75th anniversary of World War II. In Canada, I saw the Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, about 2 months ago, telling us about World War II. And here's what I got from it. The people of Holland really like us. They're really grateful to Canada, the people of Holland. And we went over there and But she never mentioned the Soviet Union, had tremendous losses in Europe, and the crucial role of the Soviet Union, our ally, close ally. Roosevelt loved the leader of the Soviet Union. Churchill loved the leader of the Soviet Union. De Gaulle, but that's all forgotten. And she thought it was important to forget it too. There's a bunch of things, as we all know, about Christopher Glynn that we'd like her to remember, and she seems to have now forgotten, having to do with her grandfather. The collaborator, the Nazi collaborator, whom she has never called that, but that's what he was. Anyway, so let's come back to Putin. Putin has written this article, and I urge you to read it. And it reviews World War II history, how the war began, and but that's not the territory I want to go into. At the end of the article, he begins to talk about, well, what was the result of World War II? And why does he think it's important now to put forward this thesis? And frankly, it's a little sobering. I'm going to jump ahead in one point to say, Putin is calling for a meeting of the Security Council, but he doesn't mean just, you know, our representatives. He's calling for a meeting of the leader of France, the leader of the United Kingdom, the leader of China, and the leader of the United States. He says, let us all go and sit down at the table together. I would call that, when I saw that, I thought, this is actually a rather sober moment, because to say that means that there is some kind of pretty dangerous situation that one of the members of the Security Council, that would be a founder of the United Nations. The United Nations is a product of the people make up the Security Council. So he's calling for a meeting of the leaders. You know, a meeting of leaders can be a really good thing, but there's also the possibility that something else could happen. But if someone is calling it in that way, in this way, it means that something is amiss in the world. All right, I'll read what he says in the latter part of his article, nationalinterest.org. It begins, and the part I'm focused on. He's talking about, he says, at the end of World War II, at that time, the leaders of the USSR, the United States, and the UK faced, without exaggeration, a historic task. Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill represented the countries with different ideologies, state aspirations, interests, cultures, but demonstrated great political will, rose above the contradictions and preferences, and put the true interests of peace at the forefront. As a result, they were able to come to an agreement and achieve a solution from which all humanity has benefited. The various powers left us a system that has become the quintessence of the intellectual and political quest of several centuries. A series of conferences, Tehran, Yalta, San Francisco, and Potsdam, laid the foundation of a world that for 75 years had no global war. Despite the sharpest contradictions, 75 years, no global war. Despite the sharpest contradictions, historical revisionism, the manifestations of which we now observe in the West, and primarily with regard to the subject of the Second World War and its outcome, is dangerous because it grossly and cynically distorts the understanding of the principles of peaceful development laid down at the Yalta and San Francisco conferences in 1945. the major historic achievement of Yalta and other decisions of that time is the agreement to create a mechanism that would allow the leading powers to remain within the framework of diplomacy in resolving their differences. The 20th century brought large-scale and comprehensive global conflicts, and in 1945, the nuclear weapons capable of physically destroying the Earth also entered the scene. In other words, the settlement of disputes by force has become prohibitively dangerous. And the victors in the Second World War understood that. They understood and were aware of their own responsibility towards humanity. The cautionary tale of the League of Nations, remember the League of Nations, it's World War I, a result of World War I. The cautionary tale of the League of Nations was taken into account in 1945. The structure of the UN Security Council was developed in a way to make peace guarantees concrete and effective as possible. That is how the institution of the permanent members of the Security Council and the right of the veto as their privilege and responsibility came into being. What is veto power in the UN Security Council? This is President Putin of Russia speaking. What's the power of this UN Security Council? Veto power. To put it bluntly, it is the only reasonable alternative to a direct confrontation between major countries. It is a statement by one of the five powers that a decision is unacceptable to it and is contrary to its interests and its ideas about the right approach. And other countries, even if they do not agree, take this position for granted, abandoning any attempts to realize their unilateral efforts. So in one way or another, it is necessary to seek compromises. A new global confrontation started almost immediately after the end of the Second World War, and was at times very fierce. And the fact that the Cold War did not grow into the Third World War has become a clear testimony of the effectiveness of the agreements concluded by the Big Three. The rules of conduct agreed upon during the creation of the United Nations made it possible to further minimize risks and keep confrontation under control. Of course, we can see that the UN system currently experiences certain tension in its work and is not as effective as it could be. But the UN still performs its primary function. The principles of the UN Security Council are a unique mechanism for preventing a major war or global conflict. The calls that have been made quite often in recent years to abolish the veto power, to deny special opportunities to permanent members of the Security Council, are actually irresponsible. After all, if that happens, the United Nations would in essence become the League of Nations, a meeting for empty talk without any leverage on the world processes. How it ended is well known. That is why the victorious powers approached the formation of the new system of the world order with utmost seriousness, seeking to avoid repetition of the mistakes of their predecessors. This is President Vladimir Putin. This is an article from the nationalinterest.org. Please go and read it from start to finish, because this is modern history. This is modern politics. This is in an environment in which the superpower, the principal superpower of the West, is behaving in a manner that's causing some others to become concerned. So I'm going to continue with what he had to say. The creation of the modern system of international relations is one of the major outcomes of the Second World War. Even the most insurmountable contradictions, geopolitical, ideological, economic, do not prevent us from finding forms of peaceful coexistence and interaction if there is the desire and the will to do so. Today the world is going through a quite turbulent time. Everything is changing from the global balance of power and influence to the social, economic, and technological foundations of societies, nations, and even continents. In the past epochs, shifts of such magnitude have almost never happened without major military conflicts, without a power struggle to build a new global hierarchy. Thanks to the wisdom and farsightedness of the political figures of the Allied powers, it was possible to create a system that has restrained from extreme manifestations of such objective competition historically inherent in the world development. It is a duty of ours, all those who take political responsibility and primarily representatives of the victorious powers of the Second World War, to guarantee that this system is maintained and improved. Today, as in 1945, it is important to demonstrate political will and discuss the future together. Our colleagues, Mr. Xi Jinping, Mr. Macron, Mr. Trump, and Mr. Johnson, supported the Russian initiative to hold a meeting of the leaders of the 5 nuclear weapon states, permanent members of the Security Council. We thank them for this and hope that such a face-to-face meeting could take place as soon as possible. What is our vision of the agenda for the upcoming summit? First of all, in our opinion, it would be useful to discuss steps to develop collective principles in world affairs, to speak frankly about the issue of preserving peace, strengthening global and regional security, strategic arms control, as well as joint efforts in countering terrorism, extremism, and other major challenges and threats. A special item on the agenda of the meeting is the situation in the global economy, and above all, overcoming the economic crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Our countries are taking unprecedented measures to protect the health and lives of people and to support citizens who have found themselves in difficult living situations. Our ability to work together and in concert as real partners will show how severe the impact of the pandemic will be and how quickly the global economy will emerge from the recession. Moreover, it is unacceptable to turn the economy into an instrument of pressure and confrontation. Popular issues include environmental protection and combating climate change, as well as ensuring the security of the global information space. Global information space. The agenda proposed by Russia for the upcoming summit of the 5 is extremely important and relevant both for our countries and for the entire world, and we have specific ideas and initiatives on all the items. There can be no doubt that the summit of Russia, China, France, United States, and the UK can play an important role and finding common answers to modern challenges and threats, and will demonstrate a common commitment to the spirit of alliance, to those high humanist ideals and values for which our fathers and grandfathers were fighting shoulder to shoulder. Drawing on a shared historical memory, we can trust each other and must do so. That will serve as a solid basis for successful negotiations and concerted action for the sake of enhancing the stability and security on the planet, and for the sake of prosperity and well-being of all states. Without exaggeration, it is our common duty and responsibility toward the entire world, towards the present and future generations. That's the conclusion of Vladimir Putin, who is the president of the Russian Federation. By the way, Reuters was circulating this, and this, again, it's found at thenationalinterest.org. Actually, the text is quite long. I thought of reading the whole thing, but I noticed that President Putin's command of the details of the history of World War II, its origins, and all that, it is, I would say, I would like to call in some of our scholar friends, and we will do that in future programs, CIUT 89.5 FM and the theater, but we will talk to people who can elaborate on it. What I would tell you is that it's a formidable essay, which if you're a scholar, or if you want to be a student of modern history, this is one of the seminal documents. When a major leader gives a major address, I would rather do what I have just done. Urge people to read the whole thing, and then also read with accuracy and respect the context and that provides context to the fullest possible extent when you read in portion, but is also protects the integrity of what the speaker is saying, the writer is saying. And when I say this, and again I am speaking as Phil Taylor of the Taylor Report, I think it's vital, absolutely vital, that people learn, we all of us learn, to take on our responsibilities, to be anywhere we find ourselves in the world, to be as informed as we can, and to be as respectful of the information as possible, rather than to put it into a little plastic bags and toss it into the heap. Our media has failed us totally. President Putin's remarks are always, they're just a headline, says, you know, I could give you a Toronto Star or Globe and Mail headline any day this week. The troublemaker, the fox, the a mischief maker, all the, and his whole thing is framed as, yes, he's a bad person, yes, Russia's a bad country, and we'll sum it up for you. For example, they will go through this, and if they can find 8 words in a row that they can misrepresent, they say, oh, those are the words we want. Then we give it to one of our hacks to surround the 8 words with some kind of, you know, hoopla, and pretend that we've been responding to him. Situation is really too dangerous, and we cannot trust anyone except ourselves to start with to sort out what is going on. So further to that, there's something else I thought it would be helpful for listeners of the Taylor Report to know what's sort of on their minds. And you know, when I say their minds, I mean specifically the government of Russia, because they are part of the political context. Canada now doesn't, we have Chrystia Freeland, we have Justin Trudeau. In the US you have Biden, you have Hillary, you have Donald Trump, who, by the way, has put sanctions all over Russia. Sanctions. He's trying to disrupt the ability of Russia and Germany to do business for natural gas. The Americans think it's their business to butt in and to mangle the economies of Germany and Russia for their own best interest. So this is what goes on. Meanwhile, Hillary says that Trump probably is a Russian agent. Everybody that didn't vote for Hillary is actually a Russian agent. And Biden, the talk is so mediocre, it's so ignorant, and we create for ourselves a bubble where we don't actually sort of take time out to say, maybe we should just find out. And they have foreign ministries, and the Russian foreign ministry has a very eloquent spokesperson, Maria Zakharova. I'm sure I mispronounced her name. My apologies. And I think I would urge everybody to just go to the Russian Foreign Ministry. Never mind the analysts. Never mind the opinion writers. Go straight to, get it from the horse's mouth. That's not a very flattering way to speak of anybody's foreign ministry. But, get the straight good. Then work your way back towards what you might think or what you hear from the Canadian Foreign Ministry or what you hear from the American Foreign Ministry, which is kind of a, pardon the expression, Barbie doll who comes to argue every day and make faces in the American media, which is not true media. They make faces back. When you see Maria Zakharova, you're going to say, hey, this is an educated professional person who does her homework, and she comes and she puts forward the position of her country. If you don't know the position of her country, I don't know why you bother. Why talk about a country if you don't know its position? And I don't mean the one you imagine to have. I mean the one they say they have. We actually live in this fantasy world where we're continually shadowboxing with something we think somebody said about somebody without listening to the person who actually spoke. This is the worst instance are those directed at the moment towards China, who also has an excellent staff of people who provide the answers. You can, as the man told me once, pick it up, put it down, stick it in your ear. I don't care. It's up to you. But if you got to get it clear. So anyway, I want to go to some of this. And to what they're saying about the world, a big one for us is the START Treaty. Canada is interested in the reduction in number of nuclear weapons. The United States lately has begun to talk about, nukes in space and a bunch of other really dangerous things. So here is Maria Zakharova speaking on the issue of Russia-U.S. dialogue on extending the new START Treaty, which is a strategic arms reduction treaty, I think. And so here's her words. Russia attaches great significance to arms control and is primarily guided by responsibility for the destinies of the world and maintaining stability and security. In the current situation, we consider dialogue with the United States on the extension of the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty to be extremely important for preventing further destruction of international agreements in this field. Further destruction of international agreements in this field. Guess who? This is Phil Taylor, Taylor Report talking. Guess who? Yeah, Trump, what's his name? Freud says we tend to forget people we find unpleasant. Anyhow, okay, the Secretary of State. They've been tearing up agreements to kind of create like confetti at a birthday party. So she says further, the issue of extending the treaty, which is only remaining the only The issue of extending the treaty, which is the only remaining bilateral agreement on nuclear arms control today, is becoming increasingly important. On December 5, 2019, President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, clearly stated Russia's readiness to extend the New START treaty without delay and any preconditions. Also, in December, an official note with this proposal was sent to our U.S. colleagues. We have not received a direct answer from the United States. U.S. officials are trying to link the extension of the treaty with issues that have nothing to do with its subject and content. Thus, they mention including restrictive measures as regards China's military programs, something to which Beijing strongly objects. This is Maria Zakharova. She's discussing Russia dialogue, U.S. dialogue on extending the New START treaty. It seems that the United States simply wants to wreck the treaty and at the same time save face and shift the blame to Russia and China. The importance of Russia-U.S. dialogue on strategic stability and military confidence building measures was noted during the June 1 telephone conversation of the Russian and U.S. presidents, and relevant instructions were issued. Considering the importance of the treaty, we believe that that dialogue on this issue must be stepped up in the near future. As for the level and format of the discussion, they can only be determined depending on a number of factors, primarily the U.S. willingness to hold practical negotiations. Needless to say, it will be necessary to take the epidemiological situation into account. That's the end of her statement. I could say, first of all, that epidemiological is not something that Trump could handle. He doesn't believe it's a problem anyway. He's got his followers in Tulsa, and he doesn't wear a mask. So, it's almost like he doesn't want to talk to foreign powers because the other states recognize there is a problem. And as a matter of fact, they're pointing out to him that he seemed to have kind of a large number of bodies that he was responsible for because he's in charge of public health. He's the president. So he said until he decided to say it was the governor's job. Anyway, let's talk about this treaty. This is very important. The Chinese are vehement about this. The United States cannot draw China into a bilateral treaty exists between Russia and China, Russia and the United States. It doesn't follow at all. I mean, you may want that, but the way if you would like China to join in a strategic treaty of this type, which exists between you and Russia, then propose it to China and the two of you talk about it. But to be for the United States to be talking to Russia and then say, oh, we want China to come, well, that's between you and them. Where's Canada's voice? We want to be incinerated. That's my understanding. Most people they saw Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The United States is the only country to ever use nuclear weapons. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, people saw what happened. Truman wanted them to see what happened. That was his little stick, big stick, to say, better pay attention. This could happen to you. So, well, okay, people paid attention. And the two nuclear powers are Russia and the U.S. And I'm going to stress this again. She says, the treaty, which is the only remaining bilateral agreement on nuclear arms control today, the only remaining, because the U.S. has walked away from all the others. And now they think they're going to walk away from this because, oh, they say, well, we'd like to bring China in. But China, unlike Russia and the United States, is actually doesn't have the same type of nuclear capacity. It has some nuclear weapons. It has some capacity. But the heavyweights are the United States and Russia. They need to talk. And Canada, instead of sitting on the sidelines, sitting on its hands, looking out the window and wondering why the world doesn't love them, they need to wake up and say, well, you know, we would like this to go forward. But that isn't happening. So that's one item. And another one that I think is rather interesting is the statement that the Russians made on the situation of Independence Day of the Republic of the Philippines. I know we have many Philippine listeners. I know that we have remarked on the Taylor Report. We believe that it is a good thing that you now have a strong leadership in the Philippines that says it is not going to be made a pawn in the old Cold War games. That's really significant. Just imagine if Ottawa were to get such a crazy idea. I mean, I understand that's complete fantasy. You're dreaming. But the Philippines actually has a leadership today which says they are tired of being pushed, particularly from Washington. So here's what was said by Maria Zakharova about Independence Day of the Republic of the Philippines. The Philippines celebrates its Independence Day on June 12, the day when the Republic of the Philippines came about in 1898 in the course of an anti-colonial revolution, which ended more than 300 years of Spanish rule. However, the Declaration of Independence did not amount to real freedom from foreign domination. The United States, which helped defeat the Spanish army, refused to recognize the Philippines' independence. Moreover, it bought the Republic from the Spanish Crown for $20 million in December 1898 in accordance with the Treaty of Paris. This led to the Philippine-American War of 1899 to 1902, as a result of which the Philippines became a dependent territory of the United States. I believe, by the way, the population of the Philippines is 100 million. We're not talking about a small population, small country. Further, Maria Zakharova, the Philippines received the status of autonomy in 1935, together with the right to send one representative to the lower house of the U.S. Congress. Isn't that great? It was only in June 1946 that the country became fully independent of the United States as a result of World War II, which included 3 years of Japanese occupation. On this day of great significance for the more than 100 million, I got it right, Philippine citizens, we would like to congratulate our friends and the Foreign Ministry of the Philippines, with whom we have developed close partner ties, and we wish them all the very best and further success in their endeavors. Now, Maria Zakharova, in a couple of paragraphs there, kind of brought to the fore some things that maybe we didn't know, right? We didn't know that the U.S. bought from the Spanish Crown for $20 million at the Treaty of Paris control over the Philippines. And that led to a bloody war in which people were massacred by the American Army. It was one of the most eloquent essays ever written by Mark Twain, was a description of the horrific violence delivered to against and on the Philippine people, whose cause he took up. Mark Twain was a champion in the Philippine cause for independence. And of course, in 1935, they said you can have one congressman. Thanks a lot. Anyway, so we learned that from Maria Zakharova's press conference. This is why I say, you know, look, let's raise your eyes up and have a look at the horizon, see what the available information is. Here's one, also of very great importance, and it's called a statement of the statements by the U.S. leadership on the withdrawal of a part of the U.S. contingent from Germany. And I'm checking my time. And she says, "We noted the statement by U.S. President Donald Trump about his intention to reduce the U.S. troop contingent in Germany by one-third. U.S. has been occupying Germany since the end of World War II, and they never say that's what it is. Anyway, they reduced their troops by one-third. For our part, we would welcome," this is Russia saying, "we would welcome any steps by Washington to reduce its military presence in Europe. Such steps would certainly help ease the confrontation potential and military political tensions in the Euro-Atlantic region. Let me point out that Moscow has always said that the U.S. preservation of a large U.S. troop contingent in Germany after the country's unification in 1990 is a Cold War relic. We are convinced that in the current geostrategic realities, all European countries, especially a country as powerful as Germany, are certainly able to ensure their security independently without the obtrusive patronage of the United States. Moreover, this patronage is not at all selfless. Washington regularly instructs its European allies, including Berlin, to increase their contribution to the NATO budget. It does this without much regard for appearances, to put it mildly. It is important to understand that for the most part, the U.S. announcements regarding its intention to withdraw its troops from other countries remain just declarations. They are not followed by any practical steps. Thus, despite the U.S. President's repeated statements on the final withdrawal from Syria, Pentagon retains its units and bases in violation of international norms and against common sense. It does not bother to explain why. As for the current U.S. initiative, it causes apprehension also because it was immediately followed by the invitation to U.S. soldiers in Germany to move to neighboring Poland. I'd like to emphasize that reconfiguration of the U.S. military presence in Europe will not only escalate the already high tensions in European security, but also complicate the prospects of a constructive Russia-NATO dialogue in the military political sphere. Obviously, many politicians in Warsaw would like to wreck the commitments fixed in the Russia-NATO Founding Act. But this line is unacceptable for us. In any event, if Washington is really going to withdraw its troops from Germany, it must also take along U.S. non-strategic nuclear weapons that are deployed there. This is particularly important since the Americans continue to actively polish practical methods of their potential use during joint nuclear missions with non-nuclear NATO members, which is an obvious violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Repeatedly drawn their attention to this incongruity. As I believe it's a very important matter. I haven't seen the brains of Ottawa and then all of our media and all. They're not talking. What is this business? You're occupying Germany, so now you're going to what? You're going to occupy Poland, and she's right. What's going to happen to those nuclear weapons? I'm now remembering that one Pompeo. They are inveterate liars, and they. You know, something said by the Russian side more than a year ago now, they said, you know what's going wrong in our relations? is with the U.S. is not only what they say, but the fact that they're not reliable. They change their minds. You have an agreement. The North Koreans could give a lecture on this one. They don't. So what is going on here? They say that when they deal with Pompeo, they frankly do not trust him. So anyway, that's Maria Zakharova. I have other matters here, but I'm going to let this go by. I'm going to just emphasize something. And it is the Taylor Report. It is CIU2. Yes, thank you very, very much for the donations. You like the station? The station likes its listeners. Territory where we believe we want to go is we want mutual respect. Those of us who are advocating peace and the end of colonialism and neocolonialism. And we're not going to be able to do our job unless we listen closely. The more tension there is, the more attention should be paid to the words of the key players. And you turn on your TV, radio, whatever, and you're going to hear what Trump thinks and what Pompeo thinks and what Johnson thinks and Macron thinks. And then they take a big brush and they say, of course, over here is Putin. And then they make a big brush. Over here is President Xi. And it behooves us to say, never mind all your little theater. Let me know what they said. The New York Times once printed a letter to them by Putin about 4 or 5 years ago, and they haven't done, as far as I know, they haven't printed any since, because it was very helpful. You could look at that, and I take my hat off to the New York Times. They put it on the record what his thoughts were, but I'm afraid, you know, all you did was make my appetite to hear more greater. I wanted to see more. There is no media here that's going to do this, so you have to do it yourself. And I know people call themselves all kinds of, give themselves revolutionary titles and talk about all their wild political projects and what they're going to do to the imperialists and capitalists. But they don't read the Russians, they don't read the Chinese. And most of what they say is pretty much incoherent. Active and dangerous to our rulers is to listen to the rulers of other countries and say to the ruler, hey, you told us this, but I hear he's saying so-and-so. That doesn't mean you agree with the guy, but you say, I'd like you to answer that because he said something kind of important. Anyway, this has been the Taylor Report, and I want to tell everybody, please read Rick Sterling's article in the American Herald Tribune about U.S. policies attempting to crush Syria. It's a very important article. Rick Sterling, the American Herald Tribune. So this has been the Taylor Report, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Your radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
Scano Swagwego. That means hello, everyone. Iswatundage, you are all listening to CIUT Wadranota. You're listening to CIUT Radio 89.5 Nyagandrung. It is placed at the frequency of 89.5.